You're listening to Face Off, Episode 20, recorded May 29th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com, or you can follow us by going to twitter.com/faceoffshow.
All right, we'll jump right into the news and follow-ups for the week. The first one, we got Clicktail. Now, two episodes ago, we talked about Clixby, a service that lets you track or kind of view your user's behavior.
Usability testing.
Usability, kind of. Okay. So, like, for example, you can watch how they can scroll down, move the mouse, how they interact with forms, the JavaScript, you know, all that good stuff.
Clixby is a good app.
Right.
But you actually found another service that does it that we thought did a little bit better. It added more features, definitely.
Yeah, and what I like about Clicktail is it actually gives you per week of free recordings. So, yeah. For example, like I think it gives you 100 free recordings per week, which, I mean, that I can't see myself ever watching more than 100. Mm-hmm. Now, if you do the paid service, though, it does have some pretty cool features. It's got, for one, HTTPS. Most of the time when you're doing checkout processes and you're going to know that, you're going to have to be able to do that. The other things is it can actually watch per session.
Yeah, it remembers people across visits, basically.
Right. Some other cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so with Clixby, you pay, you get X recordings. So by default, with like the free, I think you get 10 recordings, period. And you can buy more chunks of recordings. So yeah. Clixby would be really good for if you have a demo site and you're, you know, it has separate code from your production and you're doing specific usability testing with specific people. It would work. It's cheap. It's fast. It works. Clicktails is basically for a production website. You like even with the free account, what you do is you say, okay, I get this many visitors per day, and based on how many free ones you get, you say I want to record X percent of them per day, and so it kind of does an easy calculation for you to say how many you should record every day so that you use your quota up for the week.
Yeah, and you could do cool stuff like I want to only record 1 out of 10 people or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So you get kind of a random sample instead of just the first 100 and then you're capped.
Exactly. And so the free account does have its problems. Like for one, if you put the code on your whole page, like I just put it in my WordPress theme, you can only see your most popular article. It won't let you see the site with the most visits for that day. So I can't so when I release a new article on Montana Fragfest and that gets a lot of traffic, I can't look at like the Montana Fragfest homepage because, you know, all social media and all my Twitters and stuff are going directly to that link or a search, right? So the recent Team Fortress update brought a lot of traffic to my recent Team Fortress update article, understandably.
So you see more of the article behavior, not the homepage behavior?
Yeah, because it's recordings from every page. You know, any page that gets viewed, there's a random chance that it could be. I didn't exclude it just to Montana Fragfest route. So I can't look at the route on a day where another article is more popular because it'll only let you view the most popular visited one of the day.
Okay.
And I'm not sure I'm not sure if that's because only recordings were taken on that one because it was the most popular. Like currently with Montana Fragfest, I have it set to record 100% of visitors because I don't have enough traffic.
Are you hitting your cap?
No.
Because, I mean, like, when I log
maybe, perhaps. It could be.
When I log in, I can see multiple articles. I'm not sure if I can see the homepage. I don't think I've ever seen it.
I think you're on, like, a 30-day trial of the premium service, too, because if someone's visit has multiple page views, I can't watch after the first page view. Basically, after, and it might also be a time constraint, but after X time or after X page view, it comes up with a thing saying you have to have a paid account to view the rest of the session.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did notice on the top it says that, like, if they go to multiple pages in your site, it says, like, which page.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it go to another page.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if that's excluded from the free version.
No,
you have seen it go to another page?
It does. But again, if you don't have a pay account, it pops up a big white box in the middle saying you need a pay account to see the rest of this viewer session. So,
like, for example, I have for the last 2 days, I haven't been getting any because I've already hit my quota.
That's a bummer.
But I don't know. Like, I'm looking right now for, let's see, the 20. So a couple days ago, There's multiple articles in here, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, the cool part about it, too, is if you're a company, you can buy one paid account and put it across multiple sites. It'll keep track of each site, how many visitors per site you want to record per day and things like that. So you don't have to, like, buy an account for each site. You can just get, you know, you could just spend the, you could drop the cash on one big old account with a lot of visits and a lot of recordings and do it then. Another really cool feature is it has heat maps. So, like, you can see on your site, like, I don't know if it's, I think it's based on where the mouse is hovering or what's viewable. I'm not sure what creates the mouse, but like you can see, obviously the top of your page is very high. And then your article is, you know, let's say pretty warm because people might scroll through and watch it. But like the footer is cold as cold. I mean, there's nothing interesting there. No, you know?
Yeah. What they'll do is, so for a particular page, they'll show the scroll heat, which is kind of cool. Like for example, if most users don't scroll all the way to the bottom, that will be like cold. Whereas the top will obviously be hot.
Or if you have like a really cool picture in the middle of your article, you see it gets warmer there because that catches people's eye and they stop paused. There.
Yep.
Exactly.
Good call.
But anyways, it's ClickTail. Is it ClickTail or ClickTails?
ClickTail.
ClickTail.net.
.net. And I mean, did you learn something from any of your recordings?
Not a whole lot. I mean, you kind of learn the obvious things like people scan fast. I don't have a lot more. I mean, a blog really can't get a whole lot out of this, but if you have like an e-commerce website, easily, I mean, you could see where people get confused in your checkout process.
Definitely.
I don't have a lot of traffic to get a whole lot of depth from this, yet. I'm hoping to in the future, but it's still really cool. I mean, it's still amazing that you can include a JavaScript thing in your website and have this happen. I mean, I'm pretty amazed by that.
I know, like we talked about before, scannable, everybody scans, but this really will open your eyes. I mean, it shows you that people are scanning your stuff.
Yeah, or like
really
some of the weird web habits that people have, like as they read, they'll highlight stuff, or some people just click randomly.
Uh-huh.
Like because it records clicks, even if it doesn't click on a hyperlink or something, like in the middle of your page, like they'll click as they read and you can kind of see what they're doing. It's amazing to watch people's habits.
Yeah, the other thing I noticed, this is something that actually, I mean, ClickTail taught me. I didn't know this before, and it kind of makes sense, is what people will do is when they go to a site or your page, they'll actually scroll real quick all the way through it to make sure it's something that they're willing to read. And then they'll go back to the top and kind of scroll it slowly.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So if it's just a quick little article or something that they're like, I'm out of here.
But, I mean, you've learned a lot because, like, you've seen people read your articles and then highlight, you know, the commands, like the Linux commands to copy and paste them and stuff. Yeah, exactly.
It's really neat to watch, really. But yeah, that was one of the things that I really did notice is that people will scroll the article really quick to see if it's worth reading, and then they'll go to the top, and then they'll scan it slower. They still won't read it all, but they'll scan it slower.
Yeah, exactly. There's like levels of scanning for web users.
It's kind
of
cool.
But it's very cool. ClickTail, I think everyone should check it out. I mean, the cool part is it's free. So, I mean, throw it in your site for a week, and if you don't like it, get rid of it. You don't have to pay anything. And if you do like it, then you can pay for more if you're really interested in it.
Yeah, if you have an e-commerce site, I mean, if people don't like your checkout process and they're not telling you that they don't like it, you're going to be losing customers, and this is almost the only way.
We do things like get satisfaction and what was the other one?
But even those require the user to put their feedback. This is forced feedback.
We try to use those things, but the thing is, unless it's effortless and unless someone really has something they want to say to you, they won't. This is viewing them sort of in their it's natural habitat without them knowing. It's pretty cool. I thought it was very interesting. All right, well, that's all we got. That's our one item of follow-up this week. So let's get into our web apps, Mark. The first one we have is Files Over Miles. What is that?
Files Over Miles is a way to send one, a file to another user through the browser, peer-to-peer, encrypted, with no middleman.
That's crazy.
Just simple, just browse, here's the file, then give the link to the user. They open it up in their browser, and it starts downloading.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't touch their server at all. That's what's crazy. It's you're literally using Flash peer-to-peer encrypted connection. So like when we tested it, we were playing around with it a little bit ago, you had a file, and as long as you kept the browser open, I could download it to you peer-to-peer, no problem. But when you close it, that peer-to-peer connection is gone. It doesn't store anything on there.
Yeah, I mean, this is great. Like, it used to be like IM was kind of easy to send a file, but I don't know what happened.
It used to be you only used the official instant messaging client that came with it. Like, if you use like Windows Live Messenger or MSN Live Messenger, whatever it is anymore, it'll work. If you have two people at the same client. But now we're using things like multi-protocol instant messaging programs, web-based ones like Meebo, and those, like, the instant messaging companies like MSN and stuff don't like those because they're not getting advertising dollars from that client. So they kind of try and hinder it as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a way to do it. I mean, and it's nice because you don't have to worry about privacy stuff because you're not leaving anything on their computers. It's peer-to-peer. It's encrypted.
I think part of the reason the IM stuff isn't working as well as it used to in the past is now we're, you know, typically behind NAT routers. Maybe it's harder to route that kind of stuff.
Probably, yeah.
When we tested it, we were kind of on the same network. Do you think it would? Does a NAT traversal?
I would. Yeah,
it might. You're both connecting the same web server, and then it connects you up. I guess.
All it needs is to traverse the NAT. I mean, all you need is a request in saying and a computer on the other side saying yes, that works. That's true. I want to connect to this person. And then after that, the NAT takes care of it. But so I'm assuming it uses the web interface to create the first initial, like, hello, these are your two computers, and then that.
That would make sense.
But so the cool part about this, too, is size of it. The only limiting factor of size of this, you know, I mean, everything, even Gmail has like a 10 meg limit, you know. The only limiting size to this is the size of the computer's RAM because it has to store it in RAM while it's downloading it through the flash player. So, I mean, if you have two people with a gig of RAM, you can set up to a gig file over the internet. And, I mean, that's hard to do right now without – I mean, you can use things like SCP and FTP, but, you know –
But then you got to port forward. You got to port forward.
You have to know all that stuff. This is like, hey, Bill, here's a URL for that file. Go get it.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be IM's easy, like I said. But I mean, this is almost. What else do you do? You email it. You set up a server.
Exactly.
You put it up on a web server.
Even then, emailing.
You put it in Dropbox.
Emailing Dropbox, maybe, but
that's
still
a 2 gig limit.
Is Dropbox?
There's a public folder.
That's not HTTPS, is it? It's not encrypted.
It's encrypted on their servers through AES.
Yeah.
But the end-to-end, the point to it, I don't think is encrypted.
Exactly. So, like, I'm
not sure about that.
Like, when I get a Dropbox URL, it is not HTTPS.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right about that.
So,
yep.
So this week I was doing some HR stuff, and we're trying to send some files, and I immediately had to tell everyone in the group, I was like, do not email me these files that we will get, you know, HIPAA violated back to the Stone Age. Don't do it. And, Or no, I don't think it's HIPAA anymore. It's something. HIPAA is for medical records, but anyways. And so like I was like, oh, I'll use Dropbox. But then I noticed that the Dropbox URL is not encrypted. So that's a file being sent over the internet in clear text. So, I mean, my only real solution that I could make sure was to use a USB drive, which was a pain in the butt. I had to walk to everybody's office and give them the files and get their files back. And, I mean, this is a way to do it. I mean, for something super sensitive, I probably wouldn't do it just because I don't know really what's going on in the back end. But I mean, this, you know,
you could always encrypt it with public key.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I could encrypt the file itself and then do it with this. No problem. I would have no qualms with that at all. So, this is pretty simple and pretty cool. I hope they stick around. I'm not sure how they would monetize of it. Maybe ads, because you do have to go to the URL to download the file. But
there's no reason they couldn't put ads.
Yeah.
The beauty is they don't have to have any bandwidth. They don't have to store the files like
exactly.
Other services.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the beauty of peer-to-peer when it first came out. It was like, these servers don't need to have bandwidth and everything. BitTorrent, the whole point of BitTorrent is to distribute the transportation of files amongst a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I like peer-to-peer stuff. And I thought it was really cool that these guys were able to do it over the web with just a web browser. I mean, that's pretty cool. Good idea.
All right, that's about
files over miles. All right, so Mark, what's the next web app we want to talk about?
The next one is actually conglomeration. These guys have a lot of web apps. It's Less Everything.
Yeah, we talked about, two episodes ago, I think we talked about Less Accounting, which is actually an app from these guys. This is a really cool company. I think you'll kind of like its story. It's like two brothers who are doing Ruby on Rails programming that just want to do cool stuff. they're taking problems that they have and making workable web solutions to it and monetizing from it. So it's like, they're like, man, I hate QuickBooks. They're like, this program sucks.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, all right, well, let's make something. Let's call it Less Accounting, you know. And they're like, okay, man, all these project management stuff out there just sucks. It's like heavy-handed crap. All right, let's make lessproject.com, you know. So these guys, they're really cool. They just make fun apps. They're two really cool guys. I don't know if you've seen the picture of them. You would not think that they're like super awesome programmers. Like the one picture is of the one of the brothers with this big handlebar mustache, you know, and they just look like super cool, fun guys.
It reminds me of Ratatouille, the chefs, just because that's the same kind of character, like
cartoon character,
cartoon character look that they had.
Exactly. So we talked about Les Accounting. We talked about it, and I started looking up these guys. I saw an interview with them, and I was like, man, they have like a lot more little projects out there that than I ever thought. So, I'm gonna talk about some of their big ones. They have some really goofy little ones, like Les Memories, which is social memory storage, and then Talk Car Wash. Share car wash owners share knowledge and experiences about running and owning car washes. I have no clue what that one's about.
They must run a car wash or something.
Something, yeah. So one of their other big apps besides Les Accounting is called Les Projects. I work with Redmine, which is a project management software where I work, and it's pretty full featured. And so what we kind of end up doing is trying to take our desired workflow and kind of fit it around Redmine. This is like the simplest project tracker you can get. You like add an iteration. They even call it an iteration, which is nice because there's so much terminology out there. There's version, there's sprints if you're doing agile stuff, there's, you know, and this one they just call it an iteration, which, you know, is really generic. And then you add items to that iteration. You can, and then like to change the status of one is, you simply click on it.
So you've tried Basecamp, which is a project management tool, yeah. You know, that was done in Ruby.
The truth is, I didn't like Basecamp.
So what does this one do that, I mean, is it more simple to use?
It seems more simple, okay. Yeah. I've always found Basecamp to be cluttered and kind of hard to understand. It's simple in that it doesn't use a lot of project tracking terminology like this. You know, project managers, like traditional project management, is really advanced. I mean... there's a lot of terminology, a lot of ways to do it. And it makes sense on things like construction projects and stuff. But sometimes with software, you don't need all that overhead. So like with this, I mean, it's really simple. It doesn't even have to be a software thing. Like your iteration could be to have a party, right? So, you know, my iteration is my first party and I want to add, you know, a thing to it. I'm going to add a spec item. It calls it a spec item, but
so
title get food, priority high, iteration, my first one, and then I'm going to assign it to me. And then a little note, get food for a party. Okay. I've added it. And so the whole like status, which right now it's set to not started, you can change in the settings. So you could have as many different statuses in whatever order you want, or you can, you know, have two. By default, it comes with like five. So by default, it's not started. I click on it, and it went from not started to in development. I click it again. You know, it went from in development to in design. Click it again, in QA, and then in client review, and then completed. But you can change those however you want. If you only want two, like not done and done, you could.
Can you do stuff like these particular tasks cannot be done until this one is done, that kind of thing?
No.
Is it not really geared towards that?
No, it's not geared toward that because that's like traditional project tracking stuff, like prerequisites, Gantt charts, yeah, that sort of thing. I mean, this is, you know, I mean, for a little project that you're doing at home or something, you know, they make a lot of stuff, I think, because they started out as freelancers. Like Les Accounting is really designed towards small business or freelancers. The free account, they said, like, is for a person that does like a little freelancing a year. And it's guided towards that. I mean, you don't have to be. I mean, the truth is, with Redmine, I'm digging into it all the time. I'm kind of one of the like the sort of office people that knows Redmine, and I have to dig into it and I have to know it really well. And this, you don't have to. I mean, a little training, anybody could do this. And so, like a lot of these project management things are made for a project manager, a professional project manager, which I pretend to be, but I'm not. You know, I kind of know what I'm doing. And this is just really simple. It's really fast. These guys make applications that are not made, that basically give you the functionality that you want from something without the full features. Like there's a lot of project management software out there that is made, you know, for full-blown project managers, but not a lot made for just simple dudes and simple teams. You know, Basecamp's one of them. I agree. That's a great app.
Okay. What other apps do they got here?
They have another one that's really good. It's called Less Time Spent. It's a time tracker. That's all it is. So, you know, I have a project right now called Face Off on there, and I started it, and it's been, you know, I've been working on Face Off for 42 minutes now because we did a show prep ahead of time. I can, you know, add a note to what I did for this little sprint, and it'll keep track of like the total time and each individual time chunk.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. So it's, again, aimed towards freelancers, people that are doing small projects that they want to bill. You can keep track of your time that you're working on it. You can build a report based on your time. Like, I'm going to hit stop right now. These guys are great because everything they have is really cleverly color-coded, big text. You know, like the start button in the list next to each sort of time chunk that I could do, there's a start button. Plus, there's a big start button on the side, but they're the same color and the same text. So I know that I could push either one of them to start them. I mean, it's just really simple stuff built for freelancers, and I was really tickled with it. And a lot of it, like, you can invoice into Less Accounting or Simply Invoices. You can just build a generic report if you want. I mean, it's just these, it's a really cool company where these guys are doing just really simple apps.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, one of their other applications is kind of a funny one. It's called WeAllHateQuickBooks.com.
I saw that one.
Which is basically, it just aggregates any tweet that mentions QuickBooks in it. You know, some good, some bad. And it kind of keeps track of, like, which ones are bad or which ones. And then at the bottom, it's, like, sponsored by Less Accounting. You know, I mean, it's just cool stuff. And so, like, the last one we want to talk about is, I think you've mentioned this before. And to me, personally, I'm not sure if on the show, but was you always want to know who's following you on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So they have another one called lessfriends.com where you go in and you put your Twitter username and password, and then you hit show me my friends. And it, what it does is it lists out anyone that you're following and anyone that's following you and kind of tells you whether or not it's like a mutual follow or if you're just following them or mm-hmm. if they're just following you.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wanted this because sometimes I'll follow somebody in hopes to kind of get some sort of dialogue with them and then maybe, you know, trade off, start a relationship, you know, with similar tastes, you know, programming or whatever. And sometimes I'll follow them and I start listening to their tweets and I'm thinking that they're following me too. And sometimes I want to know, you know,
yeah,
and
this is
a great way to just go through all of your friends and find out who's not following you that you're following.
Yeah, exactly. Like this, I mean, there's Twitter is being sort of infiltrated more and more by spammers. So, I mean, I think you mentioned once that sometimes someone will follow you and you're like, oh, they look interesting. And so you'll follow them and then they immediately unfollow you.
Yeah, that
would
be
it. Just kind of makes it looks like they're only following 10 people, but, you know, they're being followed by 1,000. Like it gives them, you know, sort of e-status or something. And this is just kind of a good way to see it through or just to see. I mean, I always like to just know how many people I have an actual dialogue with.
Yeah,
you know how many I'm, and then some of the other apps that we've talked about, like where you can, you know, nest on Clutter, so you could first go through and get rid of people that haven't tweeted in 30 days, because they're obviously accounts that you don't care about anymore, and then go through here with the people that are actively tweeting and say, okay, who's following me, who's not, because sometimes you're just like, why isn't that person following me? They're like my friend, I thought.
Well, yeah, it's, you could use it in the opposite ways. You could say. All right. Yeah. I mean, you can also use it to find the people that you thought you were following, but you must have missed it or something. You know what I'm
exactly.
saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's. So you might be the jerk in that instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can find out like, Or I mean, like one time I found out this one, my buddy was playing with a script that was using like the Twitter API and he basically unfollowed everybody and I didn't know at the time. And then, I found out later because he re-added me like 3 times because he kept running the damn script to like, I don't know why. I don't even know what he was trying to do. He's ridiculous, but he ran the script and it kept unfollowing me. And so I got like 5 emails over the past like 2 days that were like, so-and-so's following you on Twitter. And I was like, what? I thought they were already following me.
Yeah. I've unfollowed people on accident and then being like, and then they'll be like replying to me and be like, I thought I had those followed, you know? So this would be a good way to get those guys back on there too.
But anyways, so I mean, the whole point is this account is, or, you know, this app, these guys are really cool. It looks like the kind of company, I mean, it's kind of what I would like to do. I would like to have a company where, with me and maybe, you know, 1 or 2 other people, some programmers are just making useful, friendly apps and making a go at it and having fun at it too. I mean, if you look at these guys, they're having a blast doing things that they like. I've read some interviews and they're just like, you know, we just want to make good stuff. And we've decided that if you make good stuff, that you like, then money will follow afterwards. You know, you don't have to be too aggressive for it. If you make a good service and make it cheap enough, people will sign up for it and give you money for good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So that does it for web apps. Let's say we hit some of our topics, Mark. What do we have today for our first topic?
Well, for the first topic, we have 21 blogging mistakes. This one, I mean, we love to talk about blogging, and just because blogging just relates to websites in general, and a lot of the stuff is just universal, and it's just good stuff.
I agree. I mean, a lot of times we say blogging, but we kind of mean web apps and web entrepreneurship in general. I mean, it transcends a lot. Bloggers tends to be the sort of biggest subset of users that have dealt with these problems, so you tend to get a lot of good articles about doing it as a blogger, but it really translates across different lines, I think.
So these are 21 blogging mistakes.
Number one, giving up too early.
Something about blogs is that they grow exponentially. At first, I mean, you could go 6 months with, like, I don't know, 50 subscribers.
Oh, less, like, or five. Less.
And you feel like you're talking to a wall.
Yeah.
Like, no one's coming to your site. You're looking at your analytics, and you get, like, 100 people, I don't know, a month, a week, and you're just like, why? I just should quit, because...
Yeah, I mean, I think this shows the power of word of mouth. I know I talk to my coworkers a lot about certain things to read. I mean, we use things like Google Reader to share articles and stuff like that, And while, I mean, social media like Dig, like massive social media like Dig and Reddit and stuff and StumbleUpon are good, I think if you want, like, you know, good subscribing readers, I think word of mouth is great. And that just shows the power of it. So, it slowly gathers up. Plus then, I mean, obviously the more readers you get, kind of like the more stuff you get, the higher page rank in Google. But yeah.
If you can get one loyal customer and really sell him and help him and make an awesome guide that just absolutely helped him, you know, tremendously, he's going to recommend the blog to somebody else.
I mean, we've seen it with our podcast. I mean, it takes time. First of all, people don't want to take their time if they don't feel like you're a worthwhile source. So you need a backlog of stuff. So people think like, okay, this guy's dedicated. He knows what he's talking about. He's been doing it for a while. I'm not going to, I hate to say it, but like pour my heart into this blog or this podcast and have the rug pulled out from underneath me in 2 weeks when they quit. Mm-hmm. You know, it shows dedication. It shows that, I mean, it's you need to reciprocate what readers do to you. If they're going to be dedicated to you, you need to be just as dedicated to them, because that's, it has to be a give and take.
Yeah. I've heard somewhere, I'm not sure, I mean, if they've done statistics or whatever, but they said basically a blog takes about a year just to get going.
Yeah.
I mean, just to really, to get something out of it, you got to post every time. It doesn't have to be every day, but it has to be a set frequency for an entire year before you start really taking off.
Exactly. And it,
I mean, obviously there's some blogs that take off in a month or a week or 2 days, but.
It happens. But the big
thing, give it some time.
Yeah, exactly. And you see this a lot with a lot of people. They're like, oh, well, I'm just going to start a blog on the internet and make money, And you're like, well, no. I mean, it takes time. You have to do it. Plus, it takes about a year, I mean, to work the kinks out of your style, to work the kinks out of your app, your writing style, your community that you want to get involved with. I mean, I know I started Montana Fragfest. It was a little bit different than it is now. I found kind of how I like to make myself sound in text and things like that. So
found your voice.
Found my voice.
So the next one I can relate to a little bit says putting off starting a blog. So Nick's Tutor, when I first started it, I was like, I want 3 months of solid content before I launch it, because I want frequency like you've never seen it. Like, I want stable every Tuesday, every whatever day mm-hmm. that I decide. I want 3 months of content so where I'm ahead and I can start writing ahead of time.
Exactly.
Because what I found is I found myself falling behind on another blog I was doing, and post frequency is huge in blogging.
It is. It really is.
And so what I did is I started ending up putting it off. I was like, oh, I'm never going to get to my 3 months. And I kept putting it off, never launched it. And then one night I was just like, all right, I'm just going to launch it. And I'm glad I did.
Yeah, I wonder who convinced you to do that. I can't remember. It was me. Give me props. I was like,
yeah.
I basically told you to prove it. I was like, you're like, oh, I'm going to launch this blog. And I'm like, prove it. You've been talking about it for a month now. Tonight. Prove it.
The first post was like number one on Reddit Linux.
Yeah. So just get on it. And the thing is, you'll spend forever preparing and never actually launch because you're never going to meet your expectations. But the truth is you just got to go for it and then be frequent after that. So number three is echoing what everyone else is talking about. You have to be unique. I mean, no one's going to read something if you're just spitting out the same junk that everyone else is.
Yeah, especially just like posting about news, like current news or whatever, like what all the other blogs are already, saying.
Exactly. I mean, I talk about video games on Montana Fragfest, and I can't just regurgitate news. There is, Kotaku, Game Trailers. I mean, those guys get exclusives. They know, they go to conferences, they go to, all this, they know people in the industry. I don't. So I went with unique, humor aspect of gaming instead of just being like, searching dig gaming news every day and then regurgitating the news of the day. It's just, it's not worth it. And I'll never get traffic that way.
They're probably going to get the news before you.
Yeah, I'll just get fake Google results when people are looking for something unique and they go five pages deep and then find my stuff and then they won't read or subscribe. Why would they? It's just dumb.
The next one is not blogging on your own domain. We talked about this a little bit earlier. You can get away with not doing it on your own domain, but I think if you really want to get serious, it's something you should probably do.
Yeah, I think sort of kinky, goofy blogs work okay in another domain. Like the ones that just might spike, there's really, Post Secret, I Can Has Cheeseburger, why not use someone else's bandwidth for that? Because there's no real content anyways. The content is just user-submitted junk. Or not junk, it's just other people's stuff. So it's, but if you're really trying to create a brand and trying to give yourself a real voice, go self-hosted, I think, no doubt.
Irregular posting.
I'm so terrible about this. I think this is absolutely the key to a successful blog.
I agree. I think I'm starting to believe that is the number one factor is regular posting.
Yep, exactly.
If you post every single day, or every other day, or every Wednesday,
if it's set schedule
and people can rely and depend on your posting on that day, you will start getting subscribers and loyal listeners.
Exactly. And you have to be just ridiculously set in doing it that, you and I, we've gone to some crazy lengths at times to make sure we have a post out on Tuesday. I mean, there's been one, because of the holiday, it was late on Tuesday. I think we screwed up once and we released on a Wednesday. And after that, we were just like, we absolutely cannot. It has to come out every Tuesday morning.
I'm pretty sure we did it Tuesday every single time, but it was at like 11 o'clock on Tuesday.
Exactly.
11 o'clock at night.
Exactly. That's it. And that's part of the year shakedown. I mean, you and I, after we do this for a year, it's going to be second nature. We know every Monday night we got to go and do post-production and get it out. I think it's just because people, especially things like, sort of tech-related blogs, work-related blogs, or like work-related podcasts like this, they have a set schedule and they expect it. They know, Tuesday. Okay.
Yeah. It's the only way you're going to get a loyal following that's going to be.
Exactly. And especially continuous. With a podcast. I mean, you cannot be irregular with a podcast. That spells death.
I think it's so important that if you can't get a rhythm, you need to start scaling it down like once a week, once every other week if you have to.
Yeah.
As long as it's every, that time. Don't post for every single day for a week and then not post for 2 weeks.
That's number five. Or no.
Which
that's what we're talking about.
I have to admit that I don't always I'm trying.
Oh, I'm
really trying, but I need to start following.
But absolutely, that's key. Yeah. I think from both of our experiences from what we've been playing around with, I was in a really good rhythm with Montana Fragfest for a while. I was doing an article every Monday. I was doing a link sort of compilation post on Wednesdays, and I did a little quippet on Fridays. And things were going really good, and I think people liked it. And then you get busy and you fall out. You have to be dedicated to it. You have to, you just have to be dedicated. I mean, without a doubt, I think that's key.
The next one we got is being too apologetic. Let's say submit a post and it's got some grammar mistakes and somebody writes some nasty comments or something, don't get too bad.
Or the example they say is like, I'm sorry I haven't been posting. Well, it's like, quit saying I'm sorry about not posting and just get off your butt and post once in a while.
Yeah.
Exactly. Number 7 is focusing more upon quick traffic than loyal readers. I agree. We've done this. I mean, it feels really good to look in your Google Analytics and see a spike for the day. But, I mean, when you look at your subscribers, you're like, that is a group of people who have selectively decided to receive my stuff as I come out with it. You know, and those are your soldiers. Those are the people that will submit it to,
yep,
you know, all the social websites that will help. I mean, those will help get you subscribers. But don't forget those guys. Don't just keep, you know, going for the big traffic spike. You have to remember your subscribers and try and integrate them as much as possible to make a community.
I think a subscriber is worth 100 visits.
Oh,
almost.
Easily. Yeah, I agree.
Clicktail will prove it to you, too. Just watch the, you know, go get a Reddit spike or a Dig spike and go watch the clicktails. It's scan like crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
And then go watch your subscribers do it. They'll read every word.
Yeah, exactly.
So the next one is clutter. You know, when you're new to something, you always want to try everything out. So you're installing every plugin, you're trying every single different ad network, you're moving stuff around, you're adding this widget and that widget, and you just get a big mess.
Yep, exactly. And it's, again, ClickTales will help you sort those problems out, hopefully, but it's got to be clean. I mean, it's just dirty websites are just so gross. And the funny part is I don't really notice myself going to a website and being like, oh, that is cluttered. But I do notice clean websites. Like I go to it and I'm like, that's slick. It's nice. It's weird that it doesn't go the opposite. Like I don't think negatively like that's cluttered, but I'm always like, that person took the time to make it nice and clean and smooth for me. I like them.
I would agree with that.
All right, so number 9 is great posts but terrible titles. He says, you know, don't shortchange yourself by investing hours into writing great content to slap a mediocre title on it. And I really struggle with this because we talked about it, like titles for SEO or titles for readers, and I really believe in titles for readers.
I've heard that titles can make or break, like especially if you're doing Dig or Reddit, like some sort of social network. A title can – people dig just – they won't even read the article. They'll just dig the title.
Yeah.
If it's something they're interested in.
Exactly.
I've heard anyways.
I've done it. I hate to admit it, but I've done it before.
I'd also say that you should probably like really, really critique your description like when you submit or if you have like an excerpt or the more part of it. You should have that like really refined.
Yeah.
Don't have like a grammar mistake in your title or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You just kiss your article goodbye.
Well, especially like a community like Dig. I mean, they are just cutthroat. You'll get like 300 comments about like, oh, really? Back, not bash, huh? Oh, Nick's tutor, you're hilarious. You know? I mean, it'll happen. Number 10 is not defining a topic. Yeah. So it's like, you know, what is your blog about? I started this and I still struggled. I had jaderobbins.com. It was my blog. It was, you know, my life. The only reason anyone would ever subscribe to that is because they know me personally and want to hear, you know, like my parents or my aunt, uncle, my grandpa, you know, I mean, my friends, no one else had a reason to subscribe to that. That's why, I mean, even like my personal blog now, I'm trying to think about how I can focus on some good things that people will be interested in because you try and think, well, there has to be someone out there. There has to be people like me out there that will like everything that I like, right? Well, yeah, but that's probably going to be like 50 subscribers. I mean, and they're going to have trouble finding your blog because they can't search like, you know, they can't go to Google and be like, blogs like me, you know, and find it. You can't, you know, they have to be like, I like web development. Oh, okay. You know, I mean, you and I struggled with this because we were interested in sort of, we liked Linux, we liked PHP, we liked MySQL, you know. Those were kind of the big things we were interested in for a while. And we're like, well, it's hard to find blogs about that. You can find PHP blogs like crazy. You can find MySQL blogs. You can find tons of Linux blogs. But that's like all Linux stuff I wasn't interested in.
Put them
in.
All together.
And... yeah. And like we found one blog, Chris Hope's Lamp blog. And we're like, that's okay. But that's it. That was the only one we could really easily find.
Yeah. For the most part, have abandoned my original blog, which is marksanborn.net.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to get loyal followers because it's going to be hard to find somebody that likes all those different things that I like. Like, I've got some security stuff, some PHP, some Perl, some you know, just oddball stuff.
Exactly.
That I like, if I found my own blog, I'd be like, whoa, well, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is the best blog I've ever read in my whole life.
But everybody else is like, what? I don't like Perl. Perl is terrible or whatever, yeah, exactly. You know, but they like the PHP part of it.
Yeah. It's tough to find. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know how to solve that problem. I mean, you have to pick like a topic and stick to it, but I don't know how to sort of search. How do you write about all the topics that you want to write about?
Well, I mean, like if you do a personal one that you have like five different topics, like PHP, Perl, and all that stuff, you're going to get good search result. Like, you know, because you're going to have the search pages and the search keywords for those titles and articles, but you're probably not going to get the loyal readership that you're looking for because
it's true.
You know, like I mean, I get hundreds of, you know, visitors to Mark Sanborn, even though I don't write there anymore.
Yeah.
It's obviously not the loyal subscribers that I haven't posted in like 3 months or something
exactly.
on there.
Exactly.
But the keywords are coming in.
I guess. I don't know.
But, I think it is a
mistake. I like subscribers. I mean, I like having a community. I like do. Having a voice.
No, I do. I agree with you. That's why I abandoned it. I've moved to a niche.
Are you going to make like a resume site there now or something?
I would like to, but I want to keep those articles with the URLs there.
You want those Google search results. You are dirty.
Well, I mean, they're good articles. I don't want to lose them. So, I mean, I'd have to migrate them or do something. I have to think about that.
True.
All right. The next one is choosing a topic you have no interest in. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Sometimes people will get into blogging trying to make money because they hear about, oh, this guy's making $100,000 a month doing blogging or whatever, $10,500, whatever exactly. It is. And they're like, oh, look, I'm going to write about Paris Hilton because everybody, you know, I've heard this one guy's making tons of money writing about her or whatever, even though they have no interest in it. You're going to lose, I mean, for the first 6 months to a year, you're going to have like 50 subscribers, maybe.
It's really tough because, I mean, like, interests kind of come and go in cycles. I mean, I started Montana Fragfest because basically me, you, and our buddy Travis were really into Team Fortress 2. And it sparked so much conversation between us that I was like, man, we should start a blog. I mean, this is great. This is a great conversation we have. But then, you know, I mean, I got a little tired of Team Fortress 2, so I stopped playing video games. Life got kind of busy, and I kind of fell out of the loop. And it just sometimes it's, I mean, make sure it's a topic you're really, really, really passionate about is what I'm trying to say. Because not even I like video games. There's no doubt I do. But I find it, I don't have my super passion for it really peaks and valleys a lot. I don't have that steady, like, yeah, you know, I mean, and the video game industry kind of goes in like cycles anyways. But it's, if you start something with a buddy, I mean, make sure that it's something that you both can sustain for a while because, you know, you guys dropped off of Team Fortress 2 the same time I did. And then and it was really that dialogue between us, which is what sparked me to start it in the first place.
That's just it. I mean, if you know that you have 6 months minimum, you have to commit to this thing to find out if it's worthwhile, you better have 6 months worth of content. And if it's something you're not passionate in, I guarantee, I mean, you think you've got a lot of content for it, but when you have to push out an article every day or every other day, you're going to find yourself, if you're not passionate about it, you're going to find yourself searching for ideas for articles.
Exactly. Like, that's a great idea. Try and, I mean, almost do it for, you know, a couple months ahead of time, like, to try it. Like, don't even actually publish a real blog. Just, if you can type out an article's worth of content at whatever cycle you think you should for, like, 2 months, if you have a hard time doing that, then maybe you might want to rethink your topic.
That'd be good advice.
Exactly. So number 12 is too many ads. This happens a lot. I was a victim. You know, I put up Montana Fragfest, and I was like, all right. And I put, you know, ads all over the place, and then I just kind of left them there. I wasn't making any money from any of them, but they were plastered all over the place. And then it was kind of like, I read some articles that were like, don't put ads up. And I was like, that makes sense. I'm not making money from them anyways right now. Why am I wasting people's time by putting them all over the place?
When you have a community that's dedicated to your content, they won't care if you put ads all over the place. But if it's a brand new blog and you're really trying to struggle and get your voice out there, and if you've got ads, you're kind of hurting yourself.
Exactly. So number 13 is being too insular / expecting readers to come to you.
For when I first started, I was kind of like, I'm gonna write these articles, and if they're good, they're gonna get Reddit and dig by themselves. I don't need to submit them. That was my thing. And then somebody's like, you should try, you know, submitting to Reddit. And now for my current blog, I mean, I have to, because if I don't, it just makes such a big difference.
Yeah. So, and I mean, part of this is just, you know, it's like anything. I mean, do you ever think about this? Things like I think about sometimes is like, how many great products are out there that could change the world or change the way we do it, but we don't know about them? I mean, how many of these projects start in someone's garage? They make a startup about it. I mean, I've heard stories about this, like a company that competes with them, a big company buys it and kills the idea. I mean, or they just, you know, they lose passion because no one wants it. They can't get the word out. They're bad at marketing. I mean, this has to happen all the time. And it has to be happening on the internet like crazy. You don't want to be spammy. I agree completely. You don't, you know, want to be like, so what do you have for lunch today? I'll take the burger montanafriedfest.com and friesfragfest.com. You know, you don't want to do that. But you need to, you know, I mean, we were kind of like this with the podcast when we first started. I didn't really want to tell people about it because I didn't want to feel like I was tooting my own horn too much. But I'm getting to the stage now where I'm damn proud of it. I think it's good stuff. And I'm going to tell people that I, you know, I podcast about web technology and I think it's good. But I, you know, I'm not gonna like. I don't have a shirt yet that has a shirt, web like, address on it.
I've put not, it in every email signature.
I don't have it tattooed to my arm yet or anything like that. So, yeah, it's a balance like everything else. You know, you have to watch what you do, but don't. It's definitely not like. I mean, you can't take. We always say that content is king, and it's true. You have to have good content. No one will read it if you have bad content, but you can't just put out good content and expect the world to flock to it immediately.
Well, they don't know about it.
Exactly. I mean, if you do everything wrong as far as search engine optimization is concerned, but you're like, well, these guys said I have good content. If I have good content, then people will come. Well, I'm telling you, that's not what we meant when we said it.
This next one kind of relates to it. It says, blogging about making money while blogging, which is kind of like if you don't know your own topic. You know?
Yeah. Don't blog about making money if you haven't made money blogging.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it makes sense.
Not being useful. I mean, some of the most successful blogs is actually being very, very useful. Like, this is good tutorial, or this is a very good resource, like 20 free icons.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Useful stuff.
Even if you think about it, even the sort of, I mean, if you really, really think about it, the stuff that you might immediately classify as non-useful is useful. Laughing in the middle of the day is useful.
That's true.
I mean, you might be like, you know, fail blog. Like, that is, why? How is that useful? Well, you know, it gives me a chuckle in the middle of the day, which helps my spirits. And that's, I find that very useful. Like humor. Yep.
You're right about that.
You know, but if it was like cats in hats.
Well, like, let's say you do a lot of opinion posts and you're ranting a lot and it's not really providing any useful.
Exactly. It's not constructive criticism or anything like that. You're just like, this sucks. I hate it. You know, that's not useful at all. So. Number 16 is writing for search engines before humans, and this is a balance again.
Yeah, I see a lot of blogs are like spam blogs where they just kind of link to everybody else and kind of skim off the traffic and stuff, and you're probably not going to go very far if you continue
it's
with that.
Terrible. A lot of Russian blogs.
becoming a statsaholic. And, yep.
This is so hard not to do. I've gotten a lot better because I've just decided that I'm not going to walk around on my hands and knees begging for readers. So I've kind of gotten to this good stage where it's like I check it once a day maybe. But there, I mean, when I first, you know, you and I started talking about blogging and I got excited about it. I mean, I was like every 5 minutes. It was terrible.
It is so weird. You're looking at your stats and you're like, oh, I got 100 people a day now. You're like, that is awesome. I got 100 people. And then, you know, a couple months go by and you're like, only 112 or only 150. It's so weird. But like stats, I remember at the beginning of blogging, I mean, I check my stats like 5 times a day, just checking,
exactly.
Seeing all these things. I could have been writing articles like
exactly.
Crazy, like, you know, going through and spelling, you know, making sure everything's spell checked and working in all the different browsers. There's just so much stuff I could have been doing other than checking stats.
Yeah, and you start digging into your stats, and you dig over the same crap. It doesn't change. Yeah. Like, okay, yeah, Internet Explorer is still the number one browser.
You're not acting. Yeah, or here's what I do most of the time, or what I used to do as a new, like, I would go into my stats and I'd be like, okay, I got this many visitors, and then I'd be done. I didn't actually like go data mining and looking like what the best content was and all that stuff. I'm like, oh, I got 100.
You're just like pure numbers, man.
Yeah. It was like, oh, that makes me feel good. I got 500 people a day or whatever, you know?
Oh, man. Number 18 is link baiting with a personal attack. And I guess because I wasn't really in the blogosphere or whatever, I didn't know this was a viable tactic to starting a blog, but I guess the big thing is these bloggers, you know, you'd start bickering with a popular blogger and all of a sudden people are like, oh, well, that person's opinionated. And that's just...
Well, yeah, you take some popular blogger's article and then you write an argument to it or something, yeah, and put it on yours and then link to him and he'll get the track back and he'll see it. And he might write a rebuttal to yours. Mm-hmm. And then you could get a huge, tremendous traffic from it. And yeah, that's kind of like what link baiting is. But what they're saying here is not to, like, a lot of times they'll attack the guy.
Yeah. Just kind of like, it's not like a useful retort to one of their articles. It's just like, he's just stupid. I mean, yeah. I kind of call it the John C. Dvorak article, because sometimes that guy, he just rants about stuff to rant. Like, it's funny. He's been in the computer industry so long that sometimes I think he doesn't even know what he's talking about. He's just like talking, he just knows stuff from the 70s. So he just like brings up this, and you're like, John, that makes no sense at all. Oh, man. So number 19 is not knowing why you're blogging. This is a great thing. It's like, you know, sometimes you start a blog and you need to really think about what you're doing. Are you trying to give back to the greater internet community in sort of a cosmic open source way? Are you trying to get supplemental income? I mean, you need to sort of formulate a business plan ahead of time as to how you want to go with it, because if you don't, you'll kind of be in this weird lingo. I was there with Montana Fragfest. I just was like, oh, blog about gaming, go. And then I was like, well, I mean, what am I trying to do? Am I trying to get a community of Montana gamers, or am I trying to get supplemental income by getting, you know, ads or some private ads or something? I don't know. It's still kind of in that stage. I don't really know what I'm going to go with it. And I need to figure that out, because it's like, if you don't figure that out and you're not heading towards that goal, you don't know how far you are from your goal unless you have an endpoint. You know, if that endpoint is floating around, you never know when you're done and when you've achieved your goals.
Okay, so the next one is not selling yourself. We kind of talked about this. I mean, you should promote yourself. Who you are and why you're there and why you have the experience you have.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it'll
help.
Personal brand is so powerful, both in, you know, maybe in later starting your own business or getting a job. I mean, if you put that URL in your resume, people are going to check it. I mean, why wouldn't you if you put it in there? And if they look and see that you are, you know, trying to, you know, really promote yourself and do good stuff, that gives you a huge edge in a job search.
Yeah, and it gives you a personality towards your blog too, by exactly selling yourself and giving a little bit of who you are and what you're doing.
Yep, definitely. Number 21 is thinking you have to know it all. And that's another thing, like you talked about, if you prepare forever, it's like, you're like, okay, well, I need to know everything. I mean, I get this. It's called analysis paralysis. I sit and think about all the stuff I need. I'm kind of in the same rut right now with my own personal business. I kind of think that I need to know more. And I just really, the truth is I need to get off my duff and go do it and take care of it and start it, because the same thing, I'll just sit and think about it forever, never actually do it. Well, that about wraps it up for this episode of Face Off Show. I want to remind our viewers that you can subscribe to our show by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can also leave feedback by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. If you have any news or follow-ups or web apps that you want us to talk about or some topics, like some articles you'd like us to discuss, you know, don't hesitate to send them. We're always looking for fun things that will pertain to our viewers. And that's it. I guess we'll see you guys next week.